Hello, Sober Town. Let's jump on that sober train and ride into the wonderful world of sobriety. You can find all our podcasts and more at SoberTownPodcast.com. Hello, my name is Bill W., and my co-host and partner is Kira.
Hi, this is the sixth episode of the Uncovering Happiness podcast. Our hope for this podcast is to share stories about uncovering happiness so that you might do the same in your life.
And our awesome guest today's name is Tim. And at the age of 52, he became a shapeshifter. He put down his corporate belt and put on a backpack and became a backcountry field guide. He's currently working on a dissertation on spiritually transformative experiences in wilderness therapy. And we met Tim last month in Park City, Utah at the Wilderness Therapy Symposium.
And we're so excited to talk to Tim today. But before we begin, we'd like to take a moment for mindfulness. Mindfulness practices serve to transition us from whatever we were doing or thinking to this present moment. And we'd also like to take this moment to remember people we've lost due to addiction or suicide, and to send out compassion and hope for those who are still touched by the suffering of mental illness and addiction, and of course, some self-love for ourselves. So let's just take a moment now together. Okay, thank you so much. Hi, Tim. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So we're going to jump right in with our first question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what does uncovering happiness mean to you?
I think more than anything, it's getting out of the way. particularly with my, you know, in my recovery life, I had all kinds of rules and expectations and things that I had to have to be just right so that I was able to, you know, kind of put down my substances and step into the life that I wanted to lead. And I realized that I just couldn't do it. And so what happened over time is little by little things started to wear away. And I had to give them up simply because of the fact they were being taken away from me. So uncovering happiness to me is recognizing that we have essentially the tools that we need internally, but oftentimes it takes a community, a spiritual basis, and a reaching outside of oneself to find what happiness might actually mean.
Mm. That's quite the answer, Tim. So how did you reach outside yourself?
Well, curiously enough, I originally did it in 12-step recovery. And little by little, I was able to begin speaking the truth after years of misdirection and deception, and particularly self-deception. And that led to being of service and getting into service work. And because service work was very important to me, I started to recognize that there was a much bigger goal and mission at play. Mm-hmm. And that was to be of service to more people as much as possible.
Cool. So in our intro to you, we kind of spoke about you're a shapeshifter and where along the line did you shape or did you shift from who you were at that point at age 52 to where you're going now?
Well, it was an interesting thing. I was a business consultant and general contractor living in Montana. And then in 2008, when the economy tanked, all of my clients disappeared and I was held with a lot of debt. I owned property and that I couldn't sell and or get a loan for. And So I went to Washington, D.C. to try and reinvigorate my consulting business. And I decided pretty quickly that I could not live in Washington, D.C., nor could I work for an NGO or for, you know, the whole scene was just really toxic feeling to me. So I started applying for outside jobs because I figured if I was going to go broke and, you know, kind of give everything up, I was losing most things like my house and my, you know, my savings and et cetera, et cetera. So I got a job hired by a company called Second Nature, and Second Nature is a wilderness therapy company. I had no idea what wilderness therapy was. And I rode my motorcycle from D.C. to Santa Clara, Utah, and went through their training, and they offered me a job. And then I started working as a backcountry guide.
Awesome. Nice.
So what is that? What does that look like for people that may have no idea, or this is the first time they've heard of a wilderness therapy backcountry guide? Like, what is the whole wilderness therapy thing? What does a guide do?
That's a great question. So wilderness therapy is a modality that's really unique in that most of the time participants are in wilderness or adventure areas, whether it's high ropes courses or river rafting or doing something adventurous without the influence of technology and the comforts of home and so forth and so on. And essentially the guide's purpose is to keep everyone safe, to backpack or hike from place to place, typically in areas where you're bushwhacking, meaning you don't have trails and in wilderness areas. And then being the kind of boots on the ground for the therapeutic intervention for most of the clients who are, generally speaking, fall into two categories: adolescents, which are usually separated by gender, and then young adults. And young adults can go all the way up to 50, so or 60. I mean, there's no. But the majority of the clients in young adult programs are 18 to 25. And so it's to do hard skills and soft skills. Hard skills are things like making fires with bow drills, shelter building, carving, leather working, and so forth and so on, to give yourself the tools that you need to be comfortable and successful living in the woods. And then the soft skills are things like communication styles and assertive communication, doing groups every day, taking on leadership skills, being self-sufficient. A lot of the clients that we work with have never cooked for themselves, and now they have to learn how to cook on a camp stove or a wood fire, which is a whole different kind of skill set, and to learn how to live in community with a small group of people who are also going through the similar experience. So the guides are there to both help create a container as well as to carry out the therapeutic plan for each individual and for the group.
Wow, that sounds like an incredibly awesome learning experience for you and for the people that are a part of the wilderness therapy groups.
Yeah.
That's much more immersive than what I did, right, Bill?
Yes, yes. Adventure therapy in a suburban setting is not wilderness therapy at all. There's no bow drills. There's no making fires.
We did flint and steel fires, but...
Oh, good.
In a pre-made fire pit.
So sure. Yeah.
A little different. But the transformative experience that the clients have, I'm sure, is very much the same. Could you speak a little to that? Like, what is it about wilderness therapy or the nature-based experience that you found most transformative for the people you worked with?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I found the transformation in myself.
Yes.
That I witnessed me unburdening from all of the societal, cultural pressures that I had been feeling for a long time. and I didn't have a phone to listen to or pay attention to. I didn't have a computer to have to, look at 300 emails a day. I didn't have any of those distractions. And then the healing nature of being in a wild place is really quite extraordinary. And there's a variety of reasons for this. Everything from the epigenetic fact that when we're living outside, it starts to turn on genetic features that have been dormant for many people. So acute senses, for example, my sense of hearing and sight and smell, all were increased because I was paying attention to them. And those things, when you're outside and in a sometimes very challenging environment with weather and wildlife and so forth and so on, you become much more attuned not only to the environment, but to yourself in the environment, meaning, human as an animal begins to take precedence over human as a conscious tool maker that's constantly trying to manipulate the environment. That's kind of what happened for me. And then I noticed that the shifts that were happening in the clients was sometimes extraordinary, meaning people that were coming in with suicidal ideation, depression, anxiety, existential crises, you name it, were on occasion having these remarkable transformative experiences where in the first time in their lives, sometimes they felt as if though they had found a direction and a purpose to their lives.
I can relate to a lot of those ideas that you just brought forth. When we hiked the Appalachian Trail, I remember the first days, it's like you're shedding a skin as you realize that when you check your phone 10 times an hour, that you still don't have cell phone service and that cell phone service really isn't a thing anymore. Like it's gone. And then you can like shake that off, you know, all of a sudden you're like, well, I don't have that anymore, so I don't have to check my phone. So that feels good. And you didn't even realize you needed that to feel better.
Right.
And then all of the thoughts of like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, or what about next week? And then it's like, well, I'm out here on a trail, so I can't do anything about that either. So I can drop that out of my backpack. I don't have to carry that around with me anymore. And then, 2.5 weeks later, you smell someone that just started hiking and they just took a shower that day. You're like, wow, I can smell your Tide laundry. That's incredible. I don't like it.
Yeah.
And just like you said, all those animal instincts as a human, they start coming out. They start expressing themselves. And yeah, I'll never forget the smells of freshly showered people from, you didn't even know where they were, but you could smell them.
You could smell them from a mile away.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, it's jarring.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And animals too. I mean, developed a sense of smelling other animals before I could see them or hear them.
Yeah.
And you become more like those wild creatures in that way. And it's an instinct, like you had said, like that's dormant. We have so many natural skills that we don't use and are valuable.
Yeah, it's a curious thing. There's this, both shrugging off a lot of the the things that we think we need to be okay, and then over time recognizing that as I went feral, and that's my favorite term for that.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That makes me so happy.
You start going feral, it's like I like sleeping on the ground.
Yeah.
I like eating food over a campfire.
Yeah.
In fact, I like it better. The food tastes so much better. I mean, even beans and rice takes on this quality of something extraordinary when you're hungry and you've been hiking for hours. So the effort you put in is this real connection to something powerful, where we are attentive to our experience, versus sitting in front of the TV and munching down, you know, whatever, and paying no attention to the food really whatsoever. Being completely distracted and having our attention diffuse.
Yeah, for me, the food thing was really interesting. I was in love with mayonnaise. We would pack out like one of those like squeeze plastic squeeze bottles, you know, it's like a serving of 75.
Yeah, right.
And you know, we'd eat that thing in like 5 days, and I would just put spoonfuls of mayonnaise on a spoon and just eat it. But it made me so happy. My brain, it loved all the fat that was in there, and it was like, this is what I need. I love this. And yeah, mayonnaise.
Never, so it freaks me out to think of you doing that, though.
Well, Kira, you were doing it at the end too. You weren't eating mayonnaise on cheese, but you were loading up on the mayonnaise.
That's true.
All right, let's move on to the next question, Tim. Are you ready?
Yep.
So, who are you now? Who are you now, and where are you on your journey to uncover happiness?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think I'm always in a process of discovery.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to stop that. I've got either a mountain bike ride or a hike planned for this weekend. It doesn't really matter which. I just need to get outside. And I know that as I do that, it's both a kind of form of exercise, but it's also a psychological, and for me, even a spiritual exercise, that here I am being a person on the earth and connecting with the natural world around me and being immersed in it. And I happen to live in an incredibly beautiful place in Northern Arizona near Sedona, where hiking outside or mountain biking is really extraordinary. So the aspect of discovering happiness, I go back to a Martin Seligman idea. Martin Seligman is a psychologist and professor at Penn State, was for many years anyway, who came up with this idea of there are five aspects to happiness. And there's positive emotions, there's engagement, relationships, meaning, and achievement. And so I gauged my sense of happiness on those five criteria. And I don't get them all at the same time. And in fact, it's not important to actually be quote unquote happy most of the time. What's important is to feel worthwhile and connected. Mm-hmm. So even, you know, positive emotions are, I think, one thing that people, I think, misunderstand in Seligman's work, because a positive emotion is one that aligns with your experience. So, for example, in the last couple of years, I've had a lot of loss. I've lost people who passed away who were very close to me. I've had physical challenges. I've had several surgeries, joint replacements, and, you know, you name it. Anyway, is to recognize that a positive emotion then is to be able to have grief and to express the grief. It's able to have sadness and to recognize loss, and to align my both actions and psychology towards those particular kinds of emotions and psychological constructs. And for a long time in my life, particularly in my pre-recovery life, I always wanted to keep all of the bad things at bay, you know, no matter what. So if I could drink it away, you know, then I didn't have to think about things. That was my solution. And now the process of uncovering happiness really is about seeing what's showing up and being authentic in that experience, no matter what it is, you know, whether it's a difficulty, a challenge, a in the environment that I think we're all living in with coronavirus and political divisiveness and all this stuff in America, I've recognized that if I can show up and be authentic in each of these kinds of relationships, both with people that I may completely be in conflict with normally, I'm opening more to understanding rather than relying on this, I'm right, they're wrong, this kind of, duality of experience, rather than recognizing other people have got different challenges. I don't know what they are. And I really want to try and find common dialogue. And that leads to this idea of relationship, being in relationship, not just to, other people, but even other people that I may not normally interact with. Being in relationship with the environment, being in relationship to the community, being in relationship to, the endeavors, the work that I've taken on in my life. So what I found in all of that is my sense of meaning is expanding. And I used to have to, early on in recovery, I used to think like, I really want to have answers to things. And now the answers aren't so important because the answers change all the time. Yeah. But the questions are important.
Hmm.
And the questions usually coming back to me are, who am I? Where am I going? How do I get there?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
That's what we're all about. Continuously speaking.
Yeah, the what you said about happiness isn't what we think it is. It's like growing up, you think happiness is like a big yellow smiley face, and that's just like what it is.
And a puppy.
And a puppy. Well, puppies probably are just happiness. So that's just what puppies are.
Yeah.
but like the actual happiness is, it's like a paradigm shift from that, because it's like happiness is above grief and excitement and love and sadness. But when you experience those things, that's what we are as humans. We're all of those together. And when I can be sad one day and know the next day I could be happy, that makes, or like maybe not use the word happy, but excited for something. Or I can just go to bed and wake up for another day. Like that, all that is like in the happiness jar of life.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Speaking of like how we can uncover happiness through sobriety or recovery, I was holding on to grief, holding on / keeping at bay, like you had mentioned, for over 10 years. I lost my high school boyfriend when I was 18 and he was 20 years old. We were together for 4.5 years, thought we'd get married one day. And that grief did not start to dissolve until my first year in recovery. And I think there was some part of using my addiction to not fully feel those feelings. And once I was able to fully feel them, I still had grief, but it had transformed. I had developed a relationship with grief.
Yeah.
And finally I healed. And additionally, I remember in my first month of sobriety, I felt anger for the first time since I was maybe a teenager.
Wow.
I hadn't felt angry in over a decade. And when I felt that anger, actually, Bill, I might have been angry at you. I'm not sure. But somebody made me angry and I expressed it. I expressed it in a way that shocked me. I didn't recognize myself. And then afterwards, I was so happy. It was so weird that I could feel so angry. And then there was a happiness about feeling angry because I had never really experienced it in such a long time. And it completely transformed and showed me that I could actually be happy being angry.
Catharsis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's one of that's another thing that happens in wilderness pretty regularly, is that people come and they've got lots of really powerful emotions and sometimes very significant trauma, and you get to work it out physically. And the curious thing about experiential work psychologically or in any way is that our bodies are learning the answer rather than us coming up with an idea. Because the ideas, they're fleeting and they don't have a lot of substance. But when you hike 10 miles, I'll tell you what, it's got substance. You know it. Your body knows it. And there's this sense of accomplishment and connectedness. And I keep coming back to this idea of connectedness and remembering a few years ago in sobriety circles where, that was kind of like the catchword is, it's really about connection, which I agree with, that, if we're connected to ourselves, our mission, our community, our goals, our trajectory, then things happen. But if we're not connected, then we want to avoid and run away and hide and, watch Netflix and you name it, right?
I cried so many times while we were hiking, and it just bubbles up out of you. You don't have to. I don't know if I was thinking about anything in particular, or if I just suppressed it for so long, and then all of a sudden, it just comes out and you just start crying, and you don't know why, but it feels so good when it's out of you, and you just feel lighter, and you're like, oh man, why didn't that happen like 10 years ago? And yeah, the whole being grounded and having connection to the things that you have to do every day, getting water, cooking food, going to the bathroom, and those are the only things that you have to do, just surviving. That brings about a connection that is so much, it's like simpler, it's less confusing, and it allows for a lot more space for your body and your mind to work together to understand what is going on, and that what's been going on in your mind for 10 years that you haven't been able to like think about or like get in touch with.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
All right, next question, Tim. Who do you want to be?
I have this idea of myself as a kind of spiritual warrior. And for me, that means doing the work, doing my personal work, having a healthy body, a healthy mind, healthy relationships, and then trying to communicate that to other people. I try to communicate with the clients that I work with, but also people that I just meet in passing. And essentially, I think that we are looking at a really frightening inflection point in the history of humanity on the planet, with climate change and with ecological devastation. And we are going to need people to be on board for working towards a solution and trying to get more people aligned to do that. The reality is that we're all living on this planet. And unless we're a billionaire flying off to Mars sometime soon, we're going to have to do whatever we can do to try and salvage the planet that we have. Otherwise, my sense is it's going to get really dire for humans in the next couple of generations. I mean, all of the predictions are certainly pointing towards that. And I have young people that I work with on a regular basis that say, like, are we even going to be here in 20 years? Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? What point does it make if I take on a career if all of this is going to collapse? So, in the face of that kind of existential dread, I see myself as being someone that says there's a way out. And the way out is each of us taking on the responsibility of living more consciously on the planet and making better decisions with our money, with our interactions, with our relationships, our behaviors, so that we're having less and less of an impact negatively on the natural environment, which sustains all of us.
That is awesome. I love that. I think that was so well put. And that leads me into your dissertation. Is that something to do with your dissertation in a way?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Can you explain to us what your dissertation is all about?
Sure. So the dissertation is Spiritually Transformative Experiences in Wilderness Therapy. And, you know, by definition, a dissertation is a narrow slice of information. So the thing that refines this kind of, you know, research view is that it's a very specific kind of environment, wilderness therapy. It's addressing the experiences of participants, and it's talking about the changes that happen in an individual's self-concept, in their belief systems, in their values, and then how they begin to put those into practice. So I'm, you know, as I mentioned previously, I noticed in myself and in other people that they were undergoing these remarkable transformations of what on the outside looks like a relief from difficulties. Mm-hmm. Now, people who are highly traumatized begin to recognize that they are resilient and they have strength, and that ultimately they can find growth through their experiences and integration. And, you know, what I noticed in myself was this sense of the possible, meaning my life is not defined by my age, my education, my, you know, all these external things. It's defined by how authentic and curious I want to be about the world, and then putting those observations into practice. So for me, my values not only shifted quite dramatically, but there was a different relationship that I had with my idea of who I was. And that relationship came from one of, I'm a damaged human being who, you know, was an alcoholic and will never, you know, amount to much, which is a message I got when I was a kid. Getting kicked out of school and getting into trouble and having to go in the military and, you know, so forth and so on. But I started to recognize that, you know, that these spiritually transformative experiences happen all the time if we pay attention. And in an environment like wilderness, they happen in a way that is very condensed and consolidated and vibrant. And the first time I had that experience, curiously enough, was in basic training. I went in the Army a long, long time ago. And I went in and I was a kid that was really having a lot of problems. I had a GED, but I'd gotten kicked out of school. I had legal problems, you know, typical young alcoholic kind of history. Anyway, I'm in the Army and I'm in basic training and I'm really realizing it's really hard. And I was in Fort Polk, Louisiana in the middle of summer and there's no air conditioning. It's hot all the time. You're sweating all the time. And I recognize, like, I feel pretty good. I kind of like this. Nice. In fact, I'm not only like this, but I'm getting good at it. And I connected with the people around me, not in a way that was superficial, but fundamental. Like, I'm working with these people and our lives could depend on one another. Well, that's a whole different way of looking at the world rather than I want to go hang out with somebody and get loaded. So, you know, that's where I think part of my experience in the woods really became transformed, because I spent most of my military career outside. You know, thankfully it was never in combat, but I did have the opportunity to spend a lot of time in forests and woods and mud and weather and snow and and so forth, and recognized that I really enjoyed all of that and that I was shifting dramatically in that experience. Well, in wilderness therapy, my sense is that we do it in a very short amount of time. You know, the average length of stay for most clients is 8 to 12 weeks. And in that time, most of the people that I've talked to who've been participants will say what an extraordinary experience it was for them. Life-changing is the thing that comes up oftentimes. And that they used to think of themselves one way, but now they think of themselves in a very different way. So the problem with all of that is, how do you hold on to it? How do you hold on to that experience, like hiking the Appalachian Trail? You're not on the trail anymore. It's still a part of you. But little by little, those realizations, that catharsis begins to wear off. And what do we do to, keep in touch with that, to hold on to it? And that's I guess the thing that's the direction I'm pointing in, is that a spiritually transformative experience is one thing. The most important thing is what you do with it and how you integrate that into your life.
Yeah.
That's awesome, Tim. I'm actually giving a presentation at the Appalachian Long Distance Hikers Association.
Nice.
This year.
Yeah.
And everything that you just said is exactly what I'm attempting to impart on the people who attend my workshop / presentation, because post hike depression or post trail depression is a really common thing. And when you look out there for resources, there aren't any that are specific to that. I mean, you could go and get a therapist or a counselor anywhere, but there is a sense that, number one, this isn't normal, and so I shouldn't need to go see a therapist because I just finished an amazing adventure. Right. But that needs to be validated, because it's that experience is true. And then also, will someone understand the magnitude of the experience and the different types of transformations that I had? And I feel as though it relates a lot to what you just said. What happens to someone when they leave wilderness therapy? Is there a continued conversation or continued integration of those experiences? And it's so important.
Well, I continue to work with a lot of those people who've been in wilderness therapy, and many of them have gone on to a transitional program. And I always bring up, like, what are you doing outside?
Yeah.
And, when people are doing that outside, invariably they feel better. Mm-hmm. And when they're not, they don't. And I don't want to make it as simplistic as that, but the fact is that there's a lot of things going on when we are immersed in nature. And it's exercise, but it's also this kind of, profound sense of belonging to something, right? I belong to this planet. I belong here. This is my place. And when I'm out in the dirt and the rocks and here, a lot of cacti, and it's like, I know these places. I'm familiar with them. I came across a big diamondback the other day hiking, and I thought, like, I love this. I love being able to encounter, these animals out in the wild. And I was mountain biking not long ago and came across a bobcat on the trail. Nice. And we just stared at each other for 5 minutes, just kind of like recognizing one another, like, here you are, here I am, and we're in this together. Mm-hmm. So I think I've kind of lost sight of the original question, but there's this sense that I have of a deep and profound sense of who I am when I'm doing that kind of work. And the more time I'm able to spend in nature, the more time I'm able to reconnect to that feeling of belonging, the better off I am.
Nice. Awesome. I love it. And that brings me to the next question. How are you going to get there? How are you going to become how are you going to become the spiritual warrior, Tim?
Yeah.
Tell me. Tell us.
Well, I'm really glad you're asking that. I mean, a part of this is me, you know, completing this dissertation and publishing some things about it. I've got another writing project that's in the works about, you know, the importance of being open to possibilities and potentials. And, and then setting up, I've got a new website that's not posted yet, but it's in process, called wildrecovery.net. And that's really going to be informational. It's going to be given resources to both wilderness therapy, ecological movements, psychological self-help, flow theory, you know, you name it. And it's just I want it to be a forum for people to gain access to some of the information that I've been privy to, as well as to start connecting people together and doing group work and connecting to, you know, projects and programs outside of ourselves. You know, like for me, National Park Service, I'm a big supporter, and Sierra Club, and, you know, a lot of these kinds of organizations that are doing really important work on behalf of us and the planet. So that's kind of the short answer. And then the other part of this is just to do more outreach, you know, to connect with more people, and particularly to connect with people that have, you know, conflicting views. It's very easy for me to have conversations with people who agree with what I have to say. It's a different matter when I'm trying to communicate this to people that don't get it. They don't understand why you would do something so ridiculous, like purposefully going out and sleeping on the ground. people in my family didn't get it. I remember my mother saying to me, like, "So why do you want to do that?" Thinking I was probably not quite right in the head, because I'd had a, you know, a kind of suit and tie job for quite a while, and I had been quite successful at it. And then, you know, I'm dirty, you know, only bathing once a week.
Yeah.
My beard's long. I'm feral. Really, really suntanned and feeling healthy and looking kind of, you know, like a wilder kid. And, which is a little scary for my mom, but for me, it was like, wow, this is good.
Yeah. I like your use of wilder kid. For me, like, being in the wilderness, that was like, even just like thinking about it, seeing pictures of where I was, and like, nobody can see your view right now, but mountains are there, and wilder kid is, that's just who I've always wanted to be. When I was a child, that's where my mind went. It was like, oh, I'm gonna go roll around in the dirt, I'm gonna go live under a tree, I'm gonna go catch some fish, and I'm just gonna be dirty all the time and have fun.
Yeah.
And that's like what it's all about for me. It's just reconnecting with my inner child, because that's what my inner child wanted, but didn't get until 35.
Yep, I hear you. Yeah, it's kind of a sad thing when we lose the ability to go out and play in mud puddles.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who decided that we had
me either.
Too old to go play in mud puddles. Like, I still, if there was a puddle on the sidewalk, I am jumping in it. I'm
They're
getting
so
everybody wet.
Like,
so fun, because people are like, I don't want to get wet, and then they get wet and they see the splash, like, wow, that was pretty fun.
Exactly. Yep.
One of my favorite things to do is walk down a mountain in the pouring rain when the trail is like a river, and your feet are just soaked in the water and you're splashing all over the place, and it's just, you see the power of everything happening, and you just feel so connected.
Yep.
Love it. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. I think that brings us to our bonus question.
Okay.
Oh, goody. Okay. All
Zero
right,
five.
here we go. It's not too hard.
Okay.
I don't think. So, Tim, what is one thing on your stop doing list and one thing on your start doing list?
Wow. Okay. Stop. Wow. There's a bunch of things on that list. Let me come up with the one that stands out is stop mindless entertainment.
Ooh. Like what is that?
Oh, it's just it's anytime when I find myself in an activity where I'm not really fully engaged and I'm a passive recipient. So watching TV, reading things that are just kind of nonsense and like guilty pleasures. Like I like apocalyptic fiction. And I can really read that stuff. And then after a while I start to recognize like, wow, this is really affecting me. And I don't necessarily want to have that. I'm looking for, I think in the terms of the definition of apocalypse is the big reveal. So I want to focus on things that are revealing. And the things that I want to start doing are really to learn more about shamanism and earth-based spiritual practices, because my life is becoming much more aligned with that, and recognizing that a lot of indigenous people and have still held on to this kind of spirituality, which is very earth-based and recognizes the spirit within all living things.
That's really cool, Tim. I love that. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So we end every podcast with a happiness or inspirational quote. This one is from Milton Erickson, the famous psychologist. He might have been a psychiatrist, famous for hypnotherapy, family therapy, and Milton said this: life will bring you pain all by itself. Your responsibility is to create joy. So, Tim, what does this mean to you? Any initial reactions, thoughts, or feelings about that quote?
Absolutely, I love it. Yeah, and joy for me has to do with flow and being able to get into a state of flow more often on a regular basis. It's why I like extreme sports. I like being outside. I love going into storms. Yeah, joy is when I'm not thinking about what an amazing experience I'm having. I'm just having it.
Awesome. Awesome. I too really like adventuring into a storm, like weather storms. If it's raining outside, I love going for a 100-mile bike ride through the storm. I don't know, man. Something about the rain and the clouds and the wind, and you're just there, and you're like, whoa, this is powerful. You get to feel it.
Amen.
All right, Tim. Thank you so much. That concludes our podcast with you today. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.
And we also want to thank all the listeners out there just giving us their time and listening to what we have to say. And I want to let everybody know we have a worksheet to help you uncover your happiness. It's a free resource that we've made for you, and it'll lead you to find out who you are now, who you want to be, and how you're going to get there. If you want the link to the worksheet, it will be below.
And if you're interested in being a guest on our podcast, there will be a link to that as well. So thank you all, and thank you, Tim, so much. It was a pleasure having a conversation with you today.
Thanks, Carol.
And we'll see you next time. Peace
Okay.
and love.
See
Thanks,
you,
Bill.
Jim. Thank
Take
you.
care. All right.